This is Meet the Residents, a series of interviews with Amman's studio and research residents in which we speak and digress about research, impact of context on artistic processes, serendipity, and making community. Amman is a non-profit arts organization and residency in North Brooklyn. Our studios are at 306 Mauger, where we host four artists for 3 months, one cohort in fall, another one in spring. This is our spring 2022 season. My name is Sarah DeMuse. I'm your host and Amman's head of publications. Welcome. Today, I'm with Rihanna Jade Parker, our first curator and writer in residence. Rihanna, thanks so much for making time. Let's jump right in. Before coming to Amman, where were you spending your time?
I was residing in Jamaica, Kingston in particular, and then left from London, where I'm actually born, to come here in the space of maybe a week.
So Rihanna, as you're here, we're now nearing the end of your residency. It would be great to hear what you're working on. I know you submitted a proposal, and I wonder how that has morphed, transformed into maybe different types of work as you're here, meeting people, finding other things perhaps in archives.
Well, the Schomburg was really the main source for myself whilst I was here, and New York Public Libraries at large. There was a significant amount on the Marcus Garvey personal papers as well as the UNIA papers, which was good. What there wasn't as much was on Amy Ashwood Garvey, you know, who my research is pinned to. She's the co-founder of these early race movements in the 1920s with Marcus Garvey as his first wife. But her papers are sitting in Duke University, which is something I found out maybe halfway through, which means that's another level of access I need to consider and adjust, because what has been documented has been the men in that movement and their wives who emboldened them in particular ways. But the individual women who spread off into their own movements and sectors around the world are a bit less whole, a lot more fragmented. And I'm choosing to look at Caribbean women in particular who moved in and throughout the region. That was the crux of it. What has changed is the angle towards the Caribbean again, particularly the Anglophone, looking at Jamaica itself as its own site of colonial, cantankerous kind of actions that have been going on for over 100 years now. We are celebrating our 60th year of independence in August. What that looks like or truly marks, we don't actually know. A conversation around a republic, which were the ideals that Marcus Garvey and Amy Ashwood were speaking about in the 1920s, are what we're still discussing today, but with a lot less vim and urgency. Because, you know, the worlds of the world seem a bit grander than those things. But I'm interested in individual improvement, self-assessment, self-regard. So the essay I had to write was speaking from that position. What kind of self-regard and self-love can I show to myself as an individual, but also within my community, whoever that is.
So how do you connect your own positionality with the matter that you're researching? Because it seems that it's so close and some of the points of interest are particularly of relevance to you, because it seems that you really want to apply them also. So it would be really great to hear about that back and forth between
the back
you and
the forth,
subject that you research.
It's felt more like a natural progression. Let's say I was maybe 16 or so. I was very happy to assume the position of a Black feminist based on tidbits I had picked up over the internet by reading very particular Black literature and consuming what I could of moving images and media. What was less apparent were visual arts at that time, anyway. So this is a 16-year-old Rihanna in London, right before the financial crash, and we were told that we're not going to have lives that our parents will have. And I still chose to not do what was required of me and to figure out something by myself. So I was independent living much younger than most people would like to be. So I've allowed myself to be authored by a lot of these women and what they have already done. My life feels like it's been authored by them already. So it does feel like a natural progression. I am a first-generation born Jamaican woman, with my parents are migrants who came at very different times to very different experiences of England. We, of course, are meant to be the difference. We were supposed to be the British ones, finally. But as I continue to push against that culture, my mum wasn't too happy with my lack of willingness to assimilate as best as she thought was possible for us in the 90s. We've gone through our own versions of civil rights movements in my time, definitely concurrent to the wider Black Lives Matter movement that has required radical reshaking around the world, which typically is what happens. Again, a continuation of the work that they were doing still. I wish it wasn't the case 100 years later. I'm talking about the same Trumps and trials, but we are here. So I'm trying not to avoid it. So my research is aiding my capacity to continue that work, and it's aiding my inspiration to continue this work. And it's allowing me to think of a close but also distant future. And that's what I'm writing. I'm writing about that in-between space, where I am now and what I'd like to project going forward.
Your presentation with Jessica Lynn was called Research as Practice. What does that mean?
On June 2nd, Rihanna invited New York-based writer Jessica Lynn to have a public conversation as part of a month series called For Your Reference. This was also an occasion to present Rihanna's recent book, A Brief History of Black British Art, published a few months earlier.
Most basically, so as a okay, I could be considered a library scientist. I could be considered an archivist in a very traditional way. Definitely a humble title like librarian, I love and appreciate. I've been around books since I was 15 in a professional way. So standard primary research, etc., is normal and fine. My intention to apply it to something or exemplify it in a physical way is what makes it a practice for myself. So I started choosing particular subjects, let's say Black Caribbean writers. And so I come across Sylvia Winter and Uma Marcin. Then the ones who were in England in particular. You know, I could have just sat with this and done nothing of it. But choosing to have lectures and print media, maybe make a film, maybe source from anywhere, and just bring together a public presentation is what switches it from my very didactic research compared to what I do with artists, myself, and my collective in the past 5 years or so.
Can you talk a bit more about the collectives too?
Oh, I've been through two major ones. The Lonely Londoners, I think we established ourselves in 2011 or 12. We should acknowledge that actually. It might be our anniversary soon. These are two friends I met on Tumblr when we were 18. We all had started university. Obviously, again, desperately seeking community online because our England was a very different England at that time. We were using the website to build visual data banks based on our own personal interests. We were very particular about citations, who we were pulling from and why. It was easy to make connections based on content and not the person because you weren't able to see profile pictures very large. You couldn't see follow accounts, those kind of things. To follow each other, I'm invested in what you're presenting. So it made some very organic relationships. And one day we met up when everyone was away, or back from the city, sorry. From university, we went to yoga. Penny's mum made us Turkish snacks. She's Turkish. Kareem's also Jamaican. And after stretching for 2 hours, we just decided to start a collective. So we have some, we know some artists. We can put something on the board. And we are, 21, between the three of us. We had exhibitions in London. We had exhibitions in New York. And that was when, after getting a fair bit of press, that people in the UK acknowledged my practice as something significant in that way. This is when I first started working the Tate. So as per usual, you have to do something outside of that space. Outside of the space to come back to the space, which is typical. Think of Black Lions, also London Film Collective, with three of my other colleagues, Karima, Hoda, and Norella. We started really out of multiple conversations over years without any real orientation. We just met up to share books and not discuss. Tried to go to art shows when they were very infrequent at that time. So when Simone was visiting London during the year of her Black Lives Matter, and she instated the London chapter, it was we were encouraged to consider what we were doing and implementing as artistic work. We chose to exemplify these networks we had built by a map referencing Labena Himid's same map from 2011. We used design and print in a particular way. We got a residency at Tate Modern after that, at the Tate Exchange. After showing with Simone, it was very quick and hasting. Like, you know, this is like a very natural flow of Wind River, and all of a sudden we had these gushing waves to address because we were this artist collective now, not knowing that that's what we were doing all of this time. It was really through Simone's encouragement to acknowledge it as an actual form.
During Simone Lee's Psychic Friends Network workshop at Tate Modern in November 2016, the London chapter of Black Women Artists for Black Lives Matter was formed.
So we are still, all three of us are alive and healthy, thankfully. We are not all of our practices are as and when, I'd imagine. I'm not as concrete to the idea of a collective lasting forever in the same way. It may have served its purpose already, and we will know that soon enough.
Right. So it seems that research is intimately tied to working together with people, reacting to what someone does. It's not you going to the Schoenberg in Harlem and finding some documents and writing up a report. It seems to be very much connected to conversation, and then also establishing maybe more connections through visualizing it in space.
Exactly. It made a big difference. You know, yeah, we could have made this graphic map and uploaded it. People reacted very well online, being able to, yes, download it and Zoom. It was very different for me to be printed out large scale at a wall in Tate Modern that people could literally touch, and then printing it and giving away actual printed maps. That's a very different experience to do that for 6 weeks and have that space for us to convene. People did all kinds of events just because we were in residence. We were happy to provide that space, and it was an intentional one. Mm-hmm. So they all play different roles, and we did what we could. We didn't think we would be able to exhibit it somewhere, but we're glad we did, because that was the true practice. Right.
Rihanna is talking specifically about We Apologize for the Delay in Your Journey, a project by the interdisciplinary research collective Thicker Black Lines, of which Rihanna is a founding member. The project centers on a map that identifies connections and networks between Black British women and femme cultural workers. It was presented at Tate between August and September 2017, together with an open co-working space, and it prompted exchanges in print and conversation.
It's also a very significant move from the digital to the spatial, which, you know, in our more traditional environments of museums and whatnot, it's the other way around, but you're really native to a different format of discursivity. So that's really, I think, very, very calling as well. Now, given that we're talking about also being in residence, the Tate residence was crucial to you. Over here, you are as an individual resident, and I wonder what that means for you, and to what degree is it important to be working outside of your, say, normal context, whatever that may mean. How do you understand those dynamics?
Well, this is my first residency, or really any appointment that I've gotten in my now 30 years and at least 10 years of thinking in and around culture, mostly for lack of not trying or thinking that it was necessary. So this is a nice residency to get, for it to be a first application to make. What I haven't been able to do before, which I'm doing explicitly now, is firstly center myself, as wild as that sounds. Everything I do is fairly communal, or at least to a duo, which becomes the much bigger and the collective automatically. And then we get to think about what I solely want to do, and I enjoy everything that I do, but what would I choose to do if I was given that time? And yes, sitting, thinking and reading around some of these people and going to places that they would be walking to and in are important, and those are the factors and steps I could never justify in another residency in the same way, that I just need to sit and think. I just need to be a bit of a flinner right now and just stroll and wonder, but with the deepest intention. This is something I want to do. Mm-hmm. So I'm taking it to a different level of seriousness. It's quite evoking in that way, which makes it super personal. And then you're like, oh, but I'm actually doing this inside of a new but still formal institution, doing this deeply personal work. So I've been juggling back and forth about my transparency and how much I can share and when. So even though I know I formally have nothing to hand over to prove what I've done, I know it will be coming out in a long text form way, but still it continues to change, which I'm okay with. So I know I'm going to leave here doing as much as I could, but there could always be more to be done. I've relieved that pressure for myself, where I don't have anyone to account to apart from myself.
No, we don't, because also our residency is really not product oriented.
Exactly.
Say so. Whatever happens, happens. Now there is kind of running in parallel at Amant this theme of hearing voices, and it's something that informs the public programs and the exhibitions. It has to do with maybe inspiration, some kind of like more supernatural element that might be guiding someone, voices from the archive. I wonder if there are certain voices that you are hearing as you work. There's clearly inspiration.
Am I hearing voices? No, not immediately. I mean, I don't work in a quiet environment. I always have music playing very loudly.
Mm-hmm.
And again, being very particular about playing a lot of dub and roots reggae in particular. So that takes over the sonic space for me. I'm hearing a lot of bass. It's bass. That's what I'm feeling in my chest. Otherwise, do I read? No, I think I do most things with a lot of noise in the background. When I'm reading, I guess I can hear some of these voices as they speak to me, but when I'm in the archive, it's almost like I'm standing in an empty room. So I'm speaking to myself, if anything, but with a very heavy soundtrack behind me.
Yeah. So you actually put on music as well as you're in the archive?
Oh, happily. I don't think I'd be able to do it without it.
Are you sometimes dancing in the archive?
In the archive of my home, yes. Maybe there are no other archives I feel that comfortable in. Maybe we'll see if I start dancing at the National Gallery of Jamaica when I go back there this summer. Maybe I'll get that comfortable.
You have to let us know. But lastly, I have a more open-ended invitation, and that is, do you have any questions for Amant? We are a young program. Learning a lot from our residents, and I just wonder if there's anything that you feel like you want to ask us. We may not have an answer, but
I mean, the questions, the answers are fine. Not having them, I guess. Yeah, it's nice to hear some of the questions in the meantime. I think I mostly understand what the catalyst and orientation was to make a very particular institution like this work in a very particular way, but with flexibility. So there's only so much you can gauge going forward. I think transparency is nice going forward about exactly what this is doing and developing. I mean, these newsletters are quite thorough. And if people do want to know a lot, they can. I feel like people are far more receptive than a much bigger place could or would be. That level of openness, I would like to think, shouldn't change. And that freeness.
Okay. Right there.
That's just down to communication, but communications are important. As for the literal aspirations of the places, artists, institutions, I don't know. I think you're going to have to, not have to, or hopefully, but know to adapt as you go along. I don't know what exhibitions are going to mean in a year or two, or what they should then start to look like. So as long as there's always room for adaption, and starting again, and starting again.
Yeah.
I think it should be okay. There's nothing wrong with having a blurb, but being adaptable.
True. Being nimble.
Mm-hmm.
Don't forget to stretch. I love that image of you and your two colleagues or friends stretching and then coming up with the idea of a collective.
Yes. Yeah. At least you went to yoga and had, we were in the middle of Central London. We had, free yoga class.
Mm-hmm.
We were just chatting. We were like, let's just stretch ourselves and take a walk now around Soho.
Yeah.
We just decided in that time.
Great. Keep our bodies present. Something that's easily forgotten.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Our theme music is composed by Silas, who also recorded the conversations. Sound editing and engineering is by Isaac Silber. Finally, we're thankful to our artists for letting us into their studios and thought processes and for finding time in their busy schedules. In our next episode, I talk with Ishaq Al-Barbari. Thanks for listening.